Good morning. This is Mary with selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, April 21st, 2025. We begin with some breaking news that is coming across the wire, which is that Pope Francis, first Latin American pontiff who ministered with humble style, dies at age 88. Vatican City, Pope Francis, history's first Latin American pontiff, who charmed the world with his humility and concern for the poor, but alienated conservatives over climate change and critiques of capitalism, died Monday. He was 88. Bells tolled in church towers across Rome after the announcement, which was read out by Cardinal Kevin Farrell from the chapel of the Domus Santa Marta, where Francis lived. At 7:35 this morning, the Bishop of Rome, Francis, returned to the home of his father. His entire life was dedicated to the service of the Lord and his church, Farrell said. Francis entered Gemelli Hospital on February 14th for a respiratory crisis that developed into double pneumonia and, at 38 days, became the longest hospitalization of his papacy. Part of his right lung was removed in the 1950s after a bout of pneumonia, and he suffered from chronic lung disease. He emerged on Easter Sunday, his last public appearance, a day before his death, to bless thousands of people in St. Peter's Square, drawing wild cheers and applause. The death now sets off a weeks-long process of allowing the faithful to pay their final respects, first for Vatican officials in the Santa Marta Chapel, and then in St. Peter's for the general public, followed by a funeral and a conclave to elect a new pope. I'm sure that there will be many more articles and information about Pope Francis in the days to come. Now we'll start with Monday's paper from April 21st. Coles Cumberland County plane crash. Trilla church members mourn victims. Easter service prayers go out to four Wisconsin passengers who died and the first responders, by Rob Stroud. Trilla. The four people killed in an airplane crash Saturday morning in Trilla were from Menominee, Wisconsin, nearly 7 hours away from this small community on the Coles-Cumberland county line. Nevertheless, the worshippers at Good Prospect Cumberland Presbyterian Church in Trilla on Easter Sunday mourned and prayed for the crash victims and their families like they were members of this community. "Everyone here is concerned for the families that are involved," said Elder Steve Wheeler after leading a prayer for them during the 10 a.m. Sunday service. His prayer also included the emergency responders who rushed to the scene when the crash occurred at approximately 10:15 a.m. Saturday on the county line road between Trilla and U.S. 45 to the west. There was burning debris from the small single-engine airplane on the road and in adjacent farm fields during the immediate aftermath. Wheeler noted after the church service that Trilla residents were among the volunteer firefighters and other responders at the scene. "I always think about the first responders who have to go in after an accident and the things they have to see and take care of," Wheeler said. Coles County Coroner Ed Schneers released the names of the two male and two female victims Sunday evening. They are Ross R. Nelson, 46, Ramey A. Rundle, 45, Courtney L. Morrow, 36, and Michael H. Morrow, 48. They were the only passengers on the plane, and all died at the scene. The Coles County Sheriff's Office said Sunday morning the investigation remains active and is being conducted by the Federal Aviation Administration and the National Transportation Safety Board. Pastor Adam McReynolds said the airplane crash was a tragedy that no one expected to happen in the small community of Trilla. McReynolds said the victims of the crash and their families have been on the minds of him and his congregation since then. "You feel very deeply for them," McReynolds said. The community also has felt the physical effects of the crash. McReynolds said this had included power being knocked out in Trilla for most of the day Saturday after the airplane hit electrical lines. He said this also included one of the main routes into Trilla being shut down well into Sunday as the FAA and the NTSB conducted their investigation. The Illinois State Police said the roadway, which was blocked by the aircraft, remained closed until about 5 p.m. Sunday. Still, McReynolds said the congregation was able to adapt as it prepared and held its services and breakfast Sunday morning, with a large crowd in attendance. Wheeler said he is also thankful that the Easter egg hunt Saturday morning concluded well before the crash, and that the crash occurred away from the church and other occupied structures. "It could have been a lot worse," Wheeler said. Continuing with the front page, Decatur Council, keeping 1% grocery tax to be considered. Officials estimate elimination would cost the city $2 million in revenue. By Brandon Moore. Decatur. The Decatur City Council on Monday, April 21st, that's this evening, will consider an ordinance that would keep in place the 1% grocery tax beyond this year. State lawmakers passed, and Governor J.B. Pritzker signed legislation last year, eliminating the state's grocery tax starting in 2026. However, the law includes a provision allowing local governments to enact their own tax. So far, dozens of cities and towns have done so, and Decatur appears likely to follow. The reason, as is often the case, is money. Even though the state has collected the tax to this point, all the revenue generated goes toward local government. Scrapping the tax would save local shoppers a few bucks a year on groceries, but leave a hole in the city's budget. Decatur officials last year estimated that the tax's elimination would cost the city about $2 million annually in lost revenue. Updated estimates were not immediately available, and City Manager Tim Gleason did not respond to a request for comment on Friday. Lawmakers had previously enacted a one-year holiday on the tax, from July 2022 to June 2023, in response to sky-high inflation during an election year. They ultimately voted to get rid of the tax completely because it is considered regressive, which means it has a disproportionate impact on lower-income people. And Illinois was among just a handful of states that taxed groceries. However, a 2004 study from the University of Illinois found that the savings from the tax elimination would be very modest, with households in the medium income bracket likely to save about $50 a year. And people at the lowest income levels are somewhat shielded, since food purchased through supplemental nutrition assistance program benefits is not taxed. The report also found that the loss of tax revenue to municipalities is consequential. In Decatur, the combination of inflationary cost increases, salary bumps guaranteed through various collective bargaining agreements, growing public pension costs, and the loss of pandemic-era stimulus funds have combined to put a strain on the city's budget. After starting with a $4 million deficit, the current city budget was brought into balance through a small property tax increase and by using revenue generated from a new natural gas use tax that is mostly shouldered by Archer Daniels Midland Company and Primient. Decatur residents have also been hit with rate increases on their water, sewer, and garbage bills over the years. The council on Monday will also consider a pair of ordinances relating to electrical improvements at the South Water Treatment Plant. The first would approve a $14.9 million contract with Springfield-based Egizi Electric, and the second would greenlight a $625,000 engineering agreement with Springfield-based Crawford, Murphy, and Tiller. The project would address advance automation efforts at the plant and include energy efficiency and sustainability features, such as new LED lighting and an EV charging station for city vehicles and switchgear that can accommodate future solar arrays. The project would be paid for using a low-interest loan from the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency. Repayment will be funded by the Water Fund, which is backed up by water rates. Continuing with some local news from page 2. Decatur police seek information in Friday shooting of 16-year-old by Tony Reed. Decatur. Police are investigating but say they are not getting much help from the victim after a 16-year-old Decatur boy was shot in the chest. Sergeant Joseph Sawyer with the Decatur Police Department said patrol officers were alerted to the shooting around 1:40 p.m. Friday. "We had a 16-year-old with a single gunshot wound to the chest," said Sawyer, speaking Sunday. "The wound was considered life-threatening at the time, but what his condition is now, I do not know." Sawyer said the victim was not being cooperative and police had little information to work with. The initial location for the shooting was listed as the 700 block of East Whitmer Street, but even that wasn't certain, as reports from the scene also listed another possible location on Cantrell Street. He, the victim, refused to provide any further information, Sawyer added, "so we're unsure at this point whether it happened on Cantrell or it happened on Whitmer." Anyone with information can reach police at 217-424-2734 or call Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477. Cash rewards are paid for tips leading to an arrest. Fire crew rescues person from Decatur house fire. Decatur. Firefighters and a police officer helped a paraplegic person escape after a fire Saturday evening at a home in the 1400 block of East Decatur Street. A news release from Decatur Fire Department Chief Neil Elder said firefighters were called to the scene at 7:20 p.m. and had received reports an occupant may still be inside the residence. The individual was treated at the scene for smoke inhalation and transported to a nearby hospital in stable condition, Elder said. Fire crews made entry and quickly located and extinguished a fire in the kitchen, effectively containing the fire to that area. Their swift response prevented the fire from spreading throughout the rest of the home. Elder said a thorough search of the house was made to make sure everyone was out. He said a second person had been displaced because the fire and the American Red Cross was providing assistance. The cause of the blaze is being investigated, but the fire chief said it was not believed to be suspicious. Turning to page 3, local and state news. Illinois, Thompson Prison. Union, 15 officers treated after possible drug exposure. By Charlene Belima, The Daily Gazette, Sterling. Thompson, 15 correctional officers at the Thompson Federal Prison were sent to local hospitals Wednesday, April 16th, after they were exposed in the prison mail room to what is believed to be a dangerous drug, the union president said. John Zumker, president of American Federation of Government Employees, Local 4070, said the officers were treated with Narcan and rushed to the hospital. One of the officers had to receive 2 doses of Narcan before being sent to the hospital, Zumker said during a news conference outside the prison. By late Wednesday afternoon, all of the officers had been released from the hospital and were recovering at home, Zumcare said. FCI Thompson is in Carroll County in northwestern Illinois. The prison is a low-security federal correctional institute with an adjacent minimum-security satellite camp and houses 2,041 male inmates, according to the U.S. Bureau of Prisons. All visiting at the prison is suspended until further notice, according to the Bureau of Prisons website. The exposure marks the 8th incident of staff hospitalization from drug exposure at the Thompson facility in the last 15 months, Zumcare said. U.S. Representative Eric Sorensen, Democrat Moline, visited the prison Wednesday afternoon to address safety concerns and said there is a need for stronger preventive measures to keep harmful substances out of federal facilities. He said during a news conference Wednesday afternoon that chemical analyses will be done to determine if the substance is fentanyl. My prayers are with the Thompson Prison correctional officers who were exposed to possibly dangerous drugs or substances, and I am currently in touch with officials at the prison to assess the situation, Sorensen said. He described the exposure as a hazardous material situation and said he plans to meet with the prison's warden. Zumker said union leaders are calling the escalation of potential drug exposure incidents a nationwide safety emergency, and that prison overdose rates have increased in recent years as drug traffickers increasingly target federal facilities through mail systems. The Thompson incident also followed last week's drug exposure of 10 staff members at Federal Correctional Complex in Victorville, California. As a result, AFGE Local 4070 is calling for an immediate halt to all incoming prison mail until proper trafficking prevention measures can be implemented, he said. The mail system remains the primary route for drugs entering our facility, Zumcare said. Without proper screening measures, we're gambling with our officers' lives. Zumcare said a House bill, H.R. 1046, the Mark Fisher Memorial, Interdiction of Fentanyl in Postal Mail at Prison Acts, would establish mandatory comprehensive protocols for screening legal mail. Fisher, a veteran mailroom supervisor at U.S. Penitentiary Atwater and former Coast Guard service member, died in August 2024 after handling contaminated mail shortly before his planned retirement. Zumcare said, Local 4070 is demanding immediate action from Congress to pass H.R. 1046 and to implement comprehensive screening procedures across all federal correctional facilities. Sorensen agrees. Dangerous chemicals getting into prison mail is an urgent problem that I am working to address, which is why I've joined bipartisan legislation to increase protections for prison staff against fentanyl exposure, he said. Correctional officers across the country work in unique and challenging environments, and I am committed to ensuring they have the protections and support they need. Turning to page A5, National and World News, The Digest. FSU classes to resume, but attendance optional. Tallahassee, Florida. Classes will resume at Florida State University on Monday, 4 days after a deadly shooting on campus left two people dead and six others injured, school officials said. Students and instructors will have the option of holding classes remotely or in person. The school waived all mandatory attendance policies that could affect grades, so students won't be punished if they choose not to go to class in person, FSU President Richard McCullough said in a letter to students and faculty. Students can also request an incomplete grade for their class if they feel they are unable to complete a course, McCullough said. We want everyone to receive the support and help that they need. For some students, that may mean not going back into a classroom, McCullough said. El Salvador-Venezuela prisoner swap proposed. San Salvador. El Salvador President Nayib Bukele proposed carrying out a prisoner swap with Venezuela on Sunday, suggesting he would exchange Venezuelan deportees from the United States his government has kept imprisoned for what he called political prisoners in Venezuela. On a post on the social media platform X, Bukele listed a number of family members of high-level opposition figures in Venezuela, journalists, and activists detained during the government's electoral crackdown last year. It comes as El Salvador has come under sharp international scrutiny for accepting deportees from Venezuela and El Salvador deported by the Trump administration, which accused them of being alleged gang members with little or no evidence. Harvard. Transit police in Boston were investigating a shooting on a subway platform Sunday near Harvard University that prompted the school to issue a shelter-in-place order for students and staff. Authorities rerouted passengers on part of the city's subway system to shuttle buses as officers from various departments searched for a suspect. Severe weather. A slow-moving active storm system brought heavy rain, large hail, and tornadoes to parts of Texas and Oklahoma, and left three people dead as severe weather warnings Sunday continued to threaten parts of the South Central and Midwest U.S. Space Station. A Soyuz capsule carrying two Russians and one American from the International Space Station landed Sunday in Kazakhstan, ending their seven-month research assignment. The trio returned after spending 220 days in space and orbiting the Earth 3,520 times, NASA said in a statement. Germany. German police in a spa town north of Frankfurt expanded a manhunt for one or two more suspects after two Turkish men were fatally shot a day earlier. Reports said Sunday. Police in the Hesse region said two victims were gunned down in Bad Nauheim, about 22 miles north of Frankfurt. New York. New York's $9 congestion toll on most drivers entering the busiest part of Manhattan remained in effect Sunday, despite an Easter deadline from the Trump administration to halt the first-in-the-nation fee. Beirut. Lebanese authorities detained several people who were allegedly planning to launch rockets into Israel and seize the weapons, the military said Sunday. Turning to page 6, the sports news, with some local baseball scores from the local teams. Mets 7, Cardinals 4. Brandon Nimmo robbed a home run in the sixth and singled in the tying run in the seventh, as New York completed a four-game series sweep of visiting St. Louis. White Sox 8, Red Sox 4. Andrew Vaughn hit a two-run homer. Pinch hitter Edgar Quero added a go-ahead two-run single, and Chicago defeated host Boston to snap a six-game losing streak. Diamondbacks 3, Cubs 2 in 11 innings. Josh Naylor's third hit of the game drove in Geraldo Perdomo in the 11th for the go-ahead run, and Arizona beat Chicago to avoid a series sweep at Wrigley Field. The NBA playoffs began over the weekend with Saturday and Sunday games. The results of the first game of each series. Number one, Cleveland, 121, Miami, 100, Boston, 103, Orlando, 86, New York Knicks 123, Detroit 112, Indiana 117, Milwaukee 98. In the Western Division, Oklahoma City 131, Memphis 80. Golden State 95, Houston 85. Minnesota 117, LA Lakers 95. And Denver 112, LA Clippers 110 in overtime. Some more local news. Bunny breeds show their best. American Rabbit Breeders Association holds national show in Decatur. By Valerie Wells. Decatur. Donnie and Lisa Wilson's first Flemish giant rabbit was given to them. He was a house rabbit, Donnie Wilson said, at the Rabbit Renegades Orrin Reynolds All Breed Rabbit Show at the Decatur Civic Center on Saturday. He laid against my leg in the recliner just like a dog or cat would. That bunny made the couple fall in love with Flemish giants, and now they breed them in their gentle giant rabbitry business south of Jacksonville, Florida, and travel the country to participate in shows just like the one Saturday. Rabbit breeders from all over the country were present, with hundreds of rabbits, representing most of the 52 breeds of rabbit, from fuzzy lop-eared bunnies to long-haired angoras to the giant Flemish rabbits like Betty Joe. The Wilsons have a climate-controlled barn for their gentle giants, and every bunny gets outdoor time and personal attention daily, plus a varied diet that includes fruits, vegetables, in addition to pelleted rabbit food. They're very people-oriented, Donnie Wilson said of the Flemish giants. They love people and getting petted. All of the bunnies have names because they're meant to be someone's pet. But they also have a unique alphanumeric ID tattooed in their left ear. All rabbits shown and raised by the American Rabbit Breeders Association have an ID number tattooed in their left ear. Show rabbits, like show dogs, cats, or any other animal, have to meet rigorous standards of color and conformation. And if they meet their breed standard, they all look pretty much alike, too. And in case you were wondering, the Cadbury Bunny is a Flemish giant, Wilson said. Josh Humphreys, president of the ARBA, judged Flemish giants on Saturday morning, lifting each one out of the small rabbit stalls lined up on tables, and expertly running his hands down their backs to check for the proper curve of their back and hindquarters, the condition and color of their fur, and how well their little white tails stood up straight and tall. Most of the bunnies were cooperative, some not so much. Some tried to escape, while their humans herded them back into their stalls and watched anxiously during the exams. Rabbits were judged in their own breed category, and one lucky rabbit would be named Best in Show at the end of the day. Each year, every breed has a spring national show, Humphreys said. Then we have our annual convention in the fall. There are multiple breed nationals going on here on Saturday. So this is a big event with all these national shows in one place. There are a number of great photographs that were accompanied this, including one of Angora rabbit bred for their fluffy coats, which can be used to make yarn and sweater. There is so much hair, you can barely see the face of the rabbit. And a picture of Betty Joe, the Flemish giant rabbit, who is indeed rather giant and is located in a very large box. And then we see Kathy Thomas brushing an Angora rabbit. It honestly looks like she just has a blob of cotton fur on that she is brushing, as you can't see the face of the animal. We'll take a short break and return with the second half of the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, April 21st. Please stay tuned.